Tuesday, 16th of August, 8:15 p.m. Little old Cambridge go top of League One. Granted, it didn't last for long, but it definitely counts. On today's UTAS, we look back at a difficult double game week. We look ahead to Premier League visitors. We discuss possible departures, as well as the return of Tom Hamer. Welcome then to this week's pod. If you've forgotten my voice or my name, I'm Jordan Warland, and I only join these podcasts when we're about to play Premier League opposition. I'm of course joined by a couple of panelists. My first one, the man that is doing the ticket of all pods this season, Mr. Tom Walker.
Good afternoon. How are we doing?
I'm doing great, mate. Did you enjoy yesterday at the Valley?
Yeah, I did. Lovely day out. Good place to watch football. Good atmosphere. And I think a good result. Hard-earned point. How many times are we going to say that?
Let's keep a counter going. We've also got Mr. Julian Roberts here.
Hello, George. Nice to have you back, mate.
It's good to be back. I mean,
No rustiness, mate. Straight in. Love that from you.
I'm energised. I'm energised from yesterday's trip to London. The coach party on the way there and back, and also the sight of seeing Tom Walker purchase what I think was about 18 Jaeger bombs.
That's a good child card transaction to look back on this morning, isn't it?
Mate, I was just going to say, like, my last memory of Charlton away was Tom holding this tray of Jaegers.
Two trays.
He took one tray, walked off of it, came back to get the rest. And as he was paying, the lady went to tell him how much it was, and he just stopped her mid-sentence and says, "Don't tell me." Tapped his phone and walked off really, really sharpish.
Just covered his eyes.
Can I just quickly jump in and just clarify that they weren't all for me?
It was a generous round. So thanks for that, Tom.
You're welcome. I don't think I'll be buying a drink for the rest of the season. So
Let's hope that we'll be toasting this time next weekend a fantastic double game week with two great results, both cup and league. Despite having two games to review and two games to preview, I thought we'd actually scrap all discussion about, you know, the action that's been or the action that's coming up and jump straight in with the juicy stuff, the stuff that everyone wants to talk about, and that is transfer speculation.
Fabrizio Romano here, isn't it?
let's discuss the following names, the likeliness of them to move, and the impact of them moving. Tom, you get first dibs on which name you would like to discuss. Your options are Harvey Nibbs, Shiloh Tracy, or Sam Smith.
Or Mark Bonner. It's up to you.
Gotta be the nibbler. This is year.
Gotta start with the nibbler. It's mad. It's mad to me that we are sat here talking about three players of our squad that people want to sign, and also one of them being Harvey Nibbs. What a turnaround he's had in his time here at United. So yeah, off the back of losing to Portsmouth, a story came out that they were interested in both Nibbs and Shiloh Tracy. Then there's also like other clubs being rumoured with Harvey Nibbs. So coming back to that first question then, Tom, how likely do you think it is that we'll lose the nibbler before the end of this transfer window? And if we did, how much of an impact would it be?
Well, I try not to get too carried away with, speculation or gestures. But at the full-time whistle at Charlton yesterday, it did look quite like a good buy wave to the away end. I don't know.
There's been so many readings of him yesterday. There's even people saying, like, look at how he didn't even celebrate his goal.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a muted affair. Look how everyone else reacted in the squad when he scored. There's been a lot of analysis of the nibbler's movements yesterday.
Yeah, I think that is maybe going a bit too far, reading too much into it. Maybe he just wanted to win the game, so he just wanted to kind of get restarted as soon as possible. But important to note that maybe he had like family in the crowd or something. He was waving like specifically at them, rather than just like a general applause. I don't know. Anyway, it's just a gesture. It's a wave. But it did look to me like maybe that might be it. But anyway, I think I guess talking about Harvey Nibbs, like more than like where he's going to go and sort of Maybe even like the impact it has on the team. I think it's just like a good chance to speak about how much he's progressed. I think I mentioned it after the MK game, in amongst all the year of the nibbler chat. We're literally talking about a spell of about 10 games where he's gone from being, you know, like discounting the off season, right at the back end of last season and so far this season. He's gone from being a player that was like at best pretty peripheral, a player that a lot of people, ourselves included, wondered what his short-term future of the club would be, loaned out to a lower division, sold on, not retained, what, you know, whatever it might be. And he's just gone, like, the progression has been probably, do you know what, since I've started going and since I've been watching Cambridge, probably like the quickest and most significant progression of a footballer I've seen, I think. And I think the most surprising thing about it is that it's not just a player getting better. It's like completely like reinventing his role within the team, which I think is probably more impressive. I mean, obviously we don't have access to the data and stuff like that, but I bet his stats are brilliant. Obviously clubs look at more than just like goals and assists, you know, things like how much they run, how much they sprint in every game. You know, physically he's a really good asset, really, really athletic, and his game's just kind of matured a lot, I think, in the last sort of like 4 months. I think what we always would have said about Nibs is that he has a good eye for goal. He can get in the right spots, but he's just so raw. Like there's not much else to his game. But now it's the complete opposite. So it doesn't surprise me to hear that there's speculation in him or interest in him. I think of the three that you mentioned, he's the one that I would see has been most likely to leave. But again, like, I'm judging that purely off, you know, how I felt at full time when he sort of came over and applauded the away end. And yeah, like if he does go, whoever gets him, I think he's getting a really good asset for the next few years, to be honest, because he's just going to continue to get better. So yeah, I think it's quite likely. I think the impact it'd have on the team, to be honest, out of the three as well, like it's probably the least, I think it'd be the smallest impact. So I do think we have players who can play in that role. It's only going to be a different way of playing and a different type of player that comes into it. But I don't think it leaves as much of a gap in the team or in the squad as what the other two would.
Just on that last point there, Tom, coming to you, Julian, we've had a question from another Tom who's written in, and perhaps we're getting ahead of ourselves here because the nibbler isn't gone just yet. But Tom asks, who would slot into the number 10 position? Do you think it would be Adam May? And then the second part of this question, and I thought you might want to answer this as we track the road to 30 league appearances, but if Nibs goes, does that mean that there might then be, you know, like this big knock on to the rest of the midfield? You might see Adam May go into the number 10 position, and you might see Lewis Simper come in and get in more games in that sort of deeper two where he's currently behind Adam May and Liam O'Neill.
Well, this is why I think this is brilliant news, just for my pre-season prediction, because it's become quite clear how ambitious 30 league appearances was as a pre-season prediction, but I'm nothing if I'm not bold. But I think Tom mentioned it there, to be honest. The thing about Nibs is he's obviously a brilliant player, and just on him, first of all, isn't it kind of crazy that the year of the nibbler, I hadn't considered that might not be for Cambridge United, which is heartbreaking.
Or maybe summer it's just of the month of the nibbler.
Yeah, the summer of the nibbler, yeah. The second thing is the way he's sort of, you know, transitioned into that new style of play is pretty remarkable how much, for an attacker, how much plaudits and how much appreciation everyone has of everything that he does off the ball as much as what he does on the ball, which is pretty, it's fairly unique. Obviously, you know, the attackers are players in the squad that you want with the ball at their feet and creating chances and all this sort of stuff, and, you know, attacking teams. So it's, you know, it's a pretty remarkable role that he plays, I think, in that side. But as Tom mentioned, I do think that there is a decent amount of cover in that position. Jack Lancaster's not been mentioned. I think he's going to have a pretty big season, and I think he would, you know, unfortunately for my prediction, I think he would be the one who would want to be trying to take that number 10 role. As much as I'm sure May would also want to push for it, and we would see that alongside with Simper or O'Neill, obviously playing a deeper role. But yeah, definitely more of a chance for Simper. But I do think that Lancaster would be the one who benefits the most from it, maybe.
Tom Walker, I am getting horrible flashbacks to January 2020, where we talk about losing a player in one position and how we've got a ready-made replacement. And I'm getting flashbacks to that pod just after we sold Harry Darling. And you and I rambled on for about half an hour about how it's fine because we've got Robbie Cundy, only for him to leave the next day. So, yeah, Jack Lancaster to be gone by the end of the week. I'm cool.
Yeah, yeah. Back that if nibs, guys, yeah.
Let's look at the other names that are being mentioned. Shiloh Tracy was another name that apparently Portsmouth are interested in. Same question coming to you first, Julian. Same question as before. How likely do you rate that move, and what do you reckon the impact would be if it did happen? Were you surprised to hear Shiloh Tracy's name be mentioned? Because he's both brilliant, but not played a lot.
I know what you mean, but I think anyone who watches him knows he's clearly got that raw talent and ability, and he's such a like striking player. Like when he's got the ball, like, do you remember in the first minute of the game yesterday, the way he attacked that fullback? He's got that ability to do that. It doesn't shock me that there's interest in him, but I think the likeliness of it is obviously a completely separate question. And yeah. I think for Tracy, he'd look at it as, okay, where am I in the immediate future going to develop best? And I think he's going to look at, you know, his mate from Spurs, Okadina, and be like, well, I have a good chance of getting a lot of game time here in a squad that, you know, he knows really well. Ambitious squad. I don't think it's I know Pompey beat us 4-1, but I don't think it's like, it's not a mad step up in quality. Where he might be in the pecking order behind a few other names, I don't know how deep that squad is. I'll say that now. But I do think that Tracy will look at it as a, you know, as a personal development question. And I think I'd hope at least that he would see the ability for him to develop at Cambridge as being stronger than at Pompey, which is mentioned. But it just seems to me like I'd be fairly shocked if Tracy was to go to Pompey. I think it was just a bit of a fluff piece that someone put out. And it's just obviously, you know, the end of the window. There's all these rumours flying about, like people doing a few last minute bits of business. Bonner seemed fairly confident in his pre-match presser before Charlton that there'd be no ins and outs. Obviously, he's not going to say anything different, but it would be fairly surprising to me if Tracy were to go. In terms of knock-on effect, I actually think a good moment to talk about this later is the questions on Ironside and who plays on the right. Mm-hmm. And I actually personally prefer Smith out there, and my personal starting 11 has Ironside up top and Smith on the right. So, you know, in a way, obviously our depth is compromised a bit. There's obviously Psycho Janna knocking about as well, but for me, Tracy doesn't even start for us right now in our best side.
Really?
Yeah, well, not for me.
Well, we've got plenty of Ironside questions coming up later.
Yeah, we'll do that later.
Coming up later in the pod, including a great one from Toby. Looking forward to that one being answered. Really interesting you say about Tracy, because I was just thinking, I know it's only 5 games into the season and he's not started all of them or not played in all of them, but I actually think he's been one of our more impressive players so far. Shiloh.
But do you think a lot of that's been off the bench, like especially against Exeter? I think when he has that impact with a slightly tired right back. Mm. I don't know. Look, I know it's game by game and it's, you know, I'm not at all. I think he's a phenomenal talent. But for me, we're a better side when Brophy's on the left, Smith's on the right, and Ironside plays up top.
But I was also going to say that I feel like Tracy looks bigger and stronger this year, which I'm really enjoying, which is making him even more sort of dangerous when he runs at people and more exciting to watch. And yeah, I don't know. I think he'd be a big loss if we were to lose him, because I think he's got, I don't know, something that extra little sort of fret and edge about him this season. And I'm really sort of backing him to have a good year for us based on how frustrating his season was last year with injuries. Let's finish this transfer speculation then with one more name. It hasn't really been mentioned this week or last week, but I get the feeling that as we get to the end of the window and the fact he's a striker, his name might crop up again. That's Mr. Sam Smith. I think he was linked with all sorts of clubs before the season even started and it's gone a bit quiet. So, Tom, do you think there might be a return of sort of people being interested in him, or do you think that's kind of been and gone now and it probably won't pop up again until maybe January when it's a different, massively different scenario where, you know, he's coming into the final few months of his contract?
I think it seems less likely now than it did a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But I think, look, strikers who score as many goals as he did last season, there's always going to be people asking questions. I kind of have the impression that sort of during the summer when you know, there were stories kind of coming out about bids and stuff like that. Like, I just kind of have the impression that there's a lot of testing the waters that goes on, particularly in summer. You know, like, oh, can we get him at this price? And if we can't, then we'll just move on. Obviously nothing materialized there. I think it comes down to how much does he want to move and like how much does he want to kind of go and play football elsewhere. I think the amount of interest we've got in our players at the moment, or reported interest, hasn't really happened for a lot of years. And the last time I can really think of it was when we had Berry and Maris, who were both getting interest. And let's be honest, like, both of them really wanted to leave the club. I think it was quite clear that they kind of had their time and wanted to go. I don't think these guys are the same. The team we've got at the moment, I don't see why they would want to go elsewhere. Unless it's like you say, a really significant step up. The Pompey story for Tracy and Nibs, like, that seems to me, it's just like the day after we've just played them, they need an attacker. Let's get a story out of it. They might like them, but they might not. You know, there might be nothing in it. And I kind of feel with Smith that if he wanted to move, we'd sell. But if he doesn't, like, we're just going to keep on to him. And I think that's probably the right thing to do. But, you know, as with the chat about Nibs, like, Smith is a really good player. He's really important for us last season. And, you know, already this season has contributed well. But, like, we do have options now. So if someone comes in that turns his head and Bonner maybe feels that, you know, he's not going to be as committed as what we've seen, then I think we would be, you know, potentially open to it. But look, clearly the ideal scenario is that the window shuts and no one's left. I don't think Smith will leave this summer. I think January, like you say, is a different story, because then it becomes a case of, well, like, if you're sat like firmly in mid-table, it's like you either get money for him or you don't. And mm-hmm. you know, if there's a deal to be done there, then you probably do it. But for now, probably not, to be honest.
My only nugget of doubt when it comes to Smith is there a club out there that started the season not as well as they would have liked? Really obvious example in our league, MK Dons, who are like, what, second bottom, which is beautiful to see. So my only nugget of doubt is if there's a club knocking around who have not had the start that they've wanted, and they panic and they're like, do you know what, actually, let's throw a bit of money at it and then try and turn it around. So that's the only one that I can see, like the only scenario I can see that someone would come into Smith's. I'm not saying MK Dons specifically, but a club of that kind of profile where they're like panicking and, you know, strikers that score goals are quick fixes. Right, let's move away from the transfer speculation then. Oh, actually, no, it's not. I've got one last question. Rather odd one that came in, Tom. It's addressed specifically to you from someone called M Train. They asked for your opinion on Cole Stockton going to Fleetwood Town rather than the Championship. And any thoughts on that?
Yeah, Casper can get to fuck. That's what it. Yeah, I mean, just to see how the sausage is made and see behind the curtain, we have a WhatsApp chat, which is, you know, technology's great, isn't it? And in that, you know, I threw it out there that Cole Stockton had handed in a transfer request. There was interest from clubs like Fleetwood and Port Vale, for example. And
NAF teams were in for him, which was a surprise to some of us.
And I just said, I think it's because he's, you know, ultimately quite a limited footballer. And that's why, you know, you're not seeing loads of Championship interest. And I just said, probably because he's not that great. And Caswell just went on and on and on. And anyway, it turns out that I'm going to be right, because he's probably going to end up going to like Port Vale or something like that, who are relegation candidates. But anyway, we'll see. Yeah. We'll move on. Thanks.
And that's why we've got to keep the two of you separate for the next few pods to keep it all healthy and happy.
It's like the Dimi Mitov debate from the start of last season, but the Cole Stockton debate rages on. Yeah. He won that one, to be fair. So 1-0 Castle for now.
Quick, let's move on. Let's move on before we lose him. Right, let's talk about the two games that we played over the last 7 days. We've got plenty of questions about our players at the top of the pitch, even more questions about our players at the back of the pitch. But before we get into those details, Tom, for the first time this season for me to ask, I'd quite like your hot takes for the week. Happy with a point at Charlton? Do you think it was a good reaction to getting beat 4-1? How annoyed were you that we lost 4-1? the floor is yours.
Yeah, take him in that order. I think Charlton was a good point. And yeah, a good response, I think. I don't think that they're anywhere near contention for some of the sort of top clubs in this division. If they're near the top six coming in the season, fair play to them, but I'll be quite surprised. So for me, it's less of a challenge than Portsmouth away was. But having said that, it's the Valley, like it's still a tough place to go. And we've come away with something, and that's good. I guess if you're looking for a hot take specifically, I'd say that I don't think we were as good as we were there last year. And if we played as well as we did last year, I think we'd won the game. But that's maybe a separate conversation. Portsmouth was... It's weird, right? Because we lost 4-1, which is obviously bad. I came out a bit frustrated, but because we kind of beaten ourselves. I think Portsmouth are a decent team. They've improved significantly. They've made a lot of very good additions over the summer. Marlon Pack, them run the game. And Scarlett and Bishop up front look like they're going to cause a lot of teams a lot of problems this season. So while I'm frustrated that we lost the game and ended up coming out of it with a pretty poor scoreline, really, I also kind of found it quite encouraging in the sense that, like, we're not going to these teams and being like outclassed yet.
Plenty of games left to go, man.
Like Pompey were better than we were on Tuesday. There's no question of that, and they deserve the win. But you kind of feel like we're now in a position where we are competing with these teams for the most part, and like the goals that we conceded, which I'm sure we can come into in more detail, were just like us self-destructing, basically. Basic mistakes, poorly defended set pieces, and I think by the end of it, we were just a beaten team. We just wanted to basically get on the coach and go home.
Tom, let me ask a quick question on Pompey. Sorry to interrupt. Do you think it was like slightly uncharacteristically naive? Do you know, like conceding that goal right before half time? It's like see out this period. What Bonner's teams always do so well is when they're in games, is see out little periods of games, get to half time with the one goal lead intact. Like you said, all those defensive mistakes. So yeah, I get you want to play out from the back, but in that situation, you've got to look at a match in a sort of different context, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think, like, obviously we've conceded a goal at the worst possible time because it completely changes, you know, the context of the game and sort of how it's played out, because then it becomes about, can you get away with the point rather than can you maybe just go on and get all three and kind of at worst a draw. But I think the thing is, like, Mark Bonner's been trying to evolve this team. Like, he's a modern day coach. Like, he's not going to want to just be backs to the wall, hoof it up the giant side for 90 minutes sort of football. He wants to evolve this team into one that's maybe a bit more attractive on the eye. You know, does things that modern coaches like their teams to do, pressing, passing, playing out from the back, all that sort of stuff. It kind of felt like we were trying to do it a bit quickly at Pompey. I think it was the third goal was just like a shower of shit, to be honest, in terms of how we tried to do that. And it's quite interesting that Bonner's comments before Charlton were very much like, alluded to the fact that we're going to basically go back to what we've been good at before. So I think come the end of the season, you maybe like to be in a position where we do that, but it kind of felt like we tried to transition into like this very, very, very different team in maybe a situation where it's not that easy to do. Fran Park, Tuesday night, big crowd against a good team with sort of regular attacking options. And I'm not saying that's all down to Bonner, because clearly like the execution of it wasn't good enough, and that's ultimately on the players. But I think it's just one that you just kind of take on the chin. Like, we know that when we go away to these teams, like, we're going to get a few beatings like that, and that's just one of them. Move on, responded well only a few days later, and you know, now you look ahead to a week where realistically you could beat Premier League opposition, and you've got a home game which you'd expect to win. That would put us on 10 points for the season. And after, what would it be, 6 games, that's a pretty decent return. So, overall pretty positive, but disappointing evening.
I think that's a really interesting point you made a moment ago about, you know, last year when we shipped 4, 5, 6 goals, it's because we were completely outclassed. Whereas Tuesday night, it felt very much like you say, that it was our own undoing. It was our own errors that gave them such a flattering scoreline. Julian, the lineup came out on Saturday, and the biggest change was up front. We had Sam Smith starting as a lone striker. Ironside dropped to the bench. I've got a few follow-up questions on Ironside for you, but the very first question is, do you think that was the right decision for the game? And do you think Ironside coming on as a sub changed the balance and got us back into the game?
It's kind of a weird one, isn't it? Because fundamentally, my answer to that is no, to be honest. I think Ironside is our best striker. He's, you know, I'm not going to go through all the things that he's good at, because every single person listening to this will know that he's a handful for defenders. He's also got an eye for goal, by the way. But it's odd to say that and then watch the goal back like I did earlier and see how well Smith did to win that header that leads to the second goal. And I think Smith's a much better aerial player than I give him credit for in my head, only because I always contrast the two of him and Ironside and always think that that's Ironside's best quality. For me, it's sort of, as I said earlier, I think Big Joe is just such a different proposition for so many defenders. And clearly, what I think Bond is trying to do here is, I mean, stop me if you disagree with me, is he's trying to figure out, I think early on in the season, these different ways of playing, right? As we mentioned last year in that period when Ironside was injured and Smith was playing as a lone striker, it looked like we'd cracked that a bit, right? Smith went on a really good scoring run and we were playing that slightly different style. We're looking in for balls in behind. I was thinking especially at Oxford away last year, not just this year. And it's interesting that we did it at Oxford this year and at Charlton, in the sense that it's clearly that different style, as Tom says, something a little bit more attractive, maybe a bit more possession, looking for a run in behind rather than something that's a little bit maybe route one or a little bit more, you know, one-dimensional direct. Maybe. With Joe Ironside up top. I mean, to me, you know, I'm not a manager. It seems to me that is there not a world in which we can do both, like not having Smith running behind, but from the right and have Ironside playing down the middle? That sort of seems to me where we're most effective and why Smith and Ironside scored so many goals last year.
That was going to be my follow-up question. Like, could we not transition to a more pleasing on the eye style of football, but still keep Ironside? Because it feels like he can play a part in both of those sides. On the subject of him playing a part, who would like to answer Toby's question, which simply says, is Ironside needed?
I think Toby's had a couple of beers there, hasn't he? That's a bit of a stretch, that. Is Ironside needed? He scored, I mean, was it with his arse or was it back here on Tuesday? Which I can't, I think
we should give him the benefit of the doubt.
Should we give him the back heel? I don't know. It seems a bit much. I think, like, in answer to it, yes, we will see that Ironside is very much needed. And I think you've only got to watch how well he played against Exeter, for me, against maybe let's put in quotes, maybe more inexperienced centre halves at this level compared to, you know, the top end of the division. A point that was made after the Exeter game was their defenders couldn't win any fouls off him. They didn't seem smart enough to win fouls off him. So Ironside wasn't not only holding the ball up incredibly well, but not getting penalised for it, as we often see him do, because people are smart at winning fouls off him when you get to a certain level. Yeah, Ironside is definitely needed. And I'd be interested to see if Bonner continues with trying the Smith up top from the off. To me, it's got to be Big Joe up top when he's fit, just playing.
Well, follow-up question from that, and we'll come to you, Tom, for this one. Mark asked, is Joe no longer a starter in our best 11?
It is an interesting one. We actually talked about this after the game yesterday. I've just
mentioned... Before or after those Jaegers?
Just after.
Just after.
So chatting a lot of shit. No, I think, like, I've just mentioned that I think Bonner's going to want to evolve this team. And I think if we end up playing in the sort of style that I think we want to move towards, I think that maybe leaves a question mark over whether Ironside gets in that team. What I would say is I think at the moment, like, he starts for me personally. And I think like you mentioned as well, Julian, I think the best option is to have him up front, down the middle, Smith off the right, Brophy off the left. And Tracy's a brilliant option to bring on. But what is more interesting and more encouraging for me is not how we play when Ironside's not there, or sort of whether he should start or whether we should do something different. It's that, like, he's not now the option, you know. Like, last season we had a lot of talks actually about what happens if he gets injured. In fact, I'm pretty sure we'd have answered that question on this pod several times, probably about this time last year, because, you know, with Mullin leaving, like, Ironside was essential, like, to everything that we did. And do you remember that spell of games last season? I think we played like most of the teams that finished in end up finishing like the top 10 mm-hmm. pretty much back to back. And I think Ironside was actually injured for those games. And it was like, what on earth do we do now? And we got some very, very poor results throughout those, or basically lost most of them. And now it's not like that at all. I think yesterday we go to Charlton, we compete, we probably shade a game against a team like that without him. And there's options left, right, and centre to kind of do different things. You know, you've got Janna on the bench if you want to play him. You've got Fajiri, who we've all completely forgotten about, who will come into it and kind of offers a similar but kind of different option up there. So, like for me now, he probably starts, but it's basically just good that he's not like we're not so dependent on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get where you're coming from. And actually, we're all sort of a little bit jesting towards Toby's question there about whether Ironside is needed. But it's actually, I can see where he's coming from. And it just goes to show how much this team has changed over the last, 6 to 9 months, where when we hit that period before where we were without Ironside, the question was, how the hell do we cope? How do we get points without him? Whereas now we've got a setup where we can operate without him. So I kind of see the thinking behind Toby and Mark's questions there about questioning whether Ironside is the main starter or the first name on the team sheet that he normally is. Let's move to the back of the pitch then. A tough week for our back five. Shifting obviously 4 goals to Portsmouth. Portsmouth, the top goal scorers in the division, FYI, if anyone's interested in that. And then a better performance against Charlton, but also kind of a soft goal to gift Charlton as well. It seems like we switched off and didn't track the man there and got a nice easy header after a good save from Mitov. Adam's been in touch. Adam asks, what is going on with our defence? 1 minute they switch off and we concede. Next minute they can withstand anything thrown at them. Thoughts on that?
Julian, do you want to take the opportunity first to lay into the defending on Tuesday night, or do you want to leave that to me?
Do you know what, Tom? Because of that round, I'm going to leave the pleasure of that to you.
Yeah, it was abysmal on Tuesday, really bad. And again, like, I'm hesitant to like really, really go into the players because obviously they've been brilliant for so long. But you can't go to place like Portsmouth and defend the way that we did. I mean, let's just go through them. Like the first goal, there's two opportunities to clear it.
Smith's slow at tracking the guy back as well, which is something that we said live. We were like, Smith's got to get back. He's got to get back.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't seem to make
it. There's one that comes in. We clear that. Pompey still have possession. And that's when they swing the second ball over. I think it's Raggett, the centre-back at the back post, completely unmarked. That's Taylor's job to keep track of him. And he basically put it on a plate for Bishop, who obviously isn't going to miss. I mean, he's unmarked, but I can kind of forgive that because the bit that kind of actually leads to the goal, like the damage is done by that point. That's the first one, and like we've just said, that completely changes the context of the game. I'd probably say that was actually the key moment, to be honest with you, in the whole evening. I think it's the second one.
Yeah. The second one is the infuriating one.
It's such a stupid foul to give away from Houndstrup. And again, like, it's just set pieces. Like, you've just got to defend them. And Mitov's attempt to come and get the ball just wasn't good enough. I mean, he knew that. Like, he came over to the way, and at the moment, he sort of literally held his hands up. So, fair enough. But like, he'll know that he's got to do better there. And again, it's a simple finish.
It's a free kick though. It's just it's so unlike, it's the sort of mistake that I can't recall off the top of my head us make it, like what Greg Taylor at Harrogate. Do you know what I mean? Something that's like, it's just such a stupid thing to attempt. Like, why? The guy's going nowhere. He's going backwards. Do you think it was the atmosphere getting on top of him a little bit? Ex-Pompey lad as well. Maybe he was a bit of like over-eager to go in and try and win the ball.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that. Like, I think maybe he's trying a bit too hard to impress. And you've got to remember that I think it was his first start.
Yeah.
Other than the cup game, obviously, against Millwall. But like, yeah, I mean,
is that where it went wrong against Pompey on Tuesday night? The fact that it was his first start. It was Taylor's first start. It was Okadina's first start right back this season. It seemed like there was a lot of change in that, in that back five. And is it only natural then that these errors and these mistakes creep into the game? Because
Bonner's got
no partnerships there.
Bonner said a few times that he really likes the depth of the squad, and he was very clear that he was going to make changes on Tuesday. Maybe there's an element of that. Like, if you have a defence which is basically, other than Lloyd Jones at centre back, it's completely different from the game that started. The team that started the one before. So maybe there's a bit of that, but we're not talking about hard things to do. Like, we're talking about very simple mistakes that led to these goals. So I'm kind of hesitant to blame that. I think again, it's poor execution. Mm-hmm. The third goal is. It's just a comedy of errors. Like, we've gone from having calm, complete possession of the ball. Pompey oppressed as well, to be fair. But we've just basically handed them a goal. there's no other way of putting, any other way of putting it. Obviously, it's a good shot. But Mitov, again, has to do better. It kind of goes right through him. It's just not good enough. It's the sort of defending that you might get away with if you're sort of towards the bottom end of League Two, or playing a team towards the bottom end of League Two. But Pompey have the quality to hurt us. And, we've had some harsh lessons at this level from teams like that, where we've gone there and not been good enough. But if you hand them opportunities, they will take them because they have the quality to do it. And then, like I mentioned earlier, I think the fourth one is the one that I can kind of forgive most of all of them. Purely because of the context, the fact that the game was completely done by then. We looked like a beaten team, and they just kind of pass it around nicely and fair play. They kind of put a bit of basically puts a bit of a cherry on top of the, on top of the evening. But very poor defending. Like I said earlier, we beat ourselves more than anything. And when you go to a place like that and play against a team like Pompey with the budget they've got, the resources and the sort of quality throughout the squad, you're gonna lose games like that.
One note on that as well is Okadina playing at right back, who against Millwall did such a brilliant job there. It just looked so much like a centre back playing at right back, and for all the Liam Bennett out on loan naysayers that will be listening to this, it's a fairly good argument for them to have in the locker. Williams injured. Not that Okadina can't play there at all. That's not what I'm saying. But he did look like he'd got found out against a team of that sort of quality on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of breaking up central defensive partnerships for the...
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say for the sake of it. There was a reason behind it. But there's a part of me that just thinks, could Greg Taylor maybe have gone right back if that's his first game back? I know, obviously, he was a left-sided fullback when he first came to us. So right back is not his natural position. So perhaps that's why he went with Jubs there. But I just feel like if you've got your first two centre-backs and you want to develop that partnership, especially considering that they are a youthful partnership, Lloyd-Jones is what, mid-20s? He's not exactly vastly experienced at this level. It just seems counterintuitive to me to sort of break up that partnership when you're seeing it sort of play so well. And I guess just Tuesday night, with all the names that were on the team sheet in defense for us, Julian, is Tuesday night a case of showing actually how much we missed the one guy that wasn't on the team sheet, Brigadier Williams? How important is he to the squad?
Hugely important. To me, massively important. He's that Okadina point, it sort of ties into that a little bit. It's the way Williams on and off the ball he's fantastic, and it does weaken us a lot not having him in the side. And I think you saw that on Saturday as well. But then I suppose what's the other option there? You keep Bennett on the bench and he plays what? Williams is going to play every game he's fit.
Yeah.
If Williams is fit, he plays 46 games, right? So then what, you don't develop another right back? I don't want this to all just to rest on Liam Bennett. The simple answer is I think Williams is absolutely quality and we are much weaker without him in the side. Would he have made the sole difference? I don't know. He didn't lose Raglet at the back post. That was Craig Taylor. And I know you want to talk about him in a second. I don't know if he himself would have made the difference on Tuesday night, but it is clear when we don't have him, just how much we miss him. Yeah, for sure.
never before has so much, so many to George Williams. I mean, I think just to kind of get in on that, I mean, we've just talked about like sort of relaxing the reliance on Joe Ironside. Now, I think there's probably two players in the team who are absolutely essential. And if you're without them, you're really having problems. Obviously, one of them is Digby, the other is Williams. It's clear as day. Like, you look what we like at Portsmouth compared to how we've been in other games, and Williams has been there. It's just, it's two different teams, basically.
It's like a level of like assurance and confidence that just seems to go throughout the whole defence. But I think, like you say, George, a lot of that does go back to partnerships and not trying to break up settled back fours.
I'm just trying to think, like, what scenario do we need to be in before we suggest putting Liam O'Neill at right back? Because I'm pretty sure when we signed him 10 years ago, that's he was touted as being able to play as fullback as well.
Who knows? Maybe we'll convert Tracy into like a right wing back or something, and we'll play both him and Smith on the right.
might as well just add to that as well, just very quickly. Like the other side, it's exactly the same with Dunk.
Yes, it is. You're absolutely right.
Clearly, we've got Houndstrip there as well, so we're not as reliant on Harrison Dunk. Like, Houndstrip is a good player. He can come in and do a good job, but I feel like we just look so much more assured on Saturday. And part of that is probably because we were better as a team, but I think part of that is that the two fullbacks are the ones that I would want to see starting.
And Dunk's ball in for our goal is a proper peach. Yeah, what a
is
ball.
Is there a better sight of football than Harrison Dunk? Step over, head down, touchline, cross in. Something
absolutely iconic.
Yeah. I'm glad that we've naturally sort of moved the conversation onto the positives from Saturday, because I felt like the defence took quite a beating, our critique of the Portsmouth game. And actually, credit where credit's due, for like most of the Charlton game, I thought our back five were brilliant. There were so many chances that Charlton had, so many times they were putting the ball into the box, and it was just ping-ponging around, a couple of good saves from Mitov. It really did feel like they were throwing everything at us. And even despite that, I didn't really feel that panicked. I did feel like we were, you know, quite in control sort of defensively. That's what makes, in my mind, their goal quite disappointing. I know there's questions of possible offside. Don't quite see it myself. But for pretty much all of the game on Saturday, no complaints from me for how the defensive unit responded.
George, do you think Saturday was also like maybe a decent example of us improving our defending on big wide pitches, which is obviously something that we struggled with a lot last year? And even more so, I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me. I'm assuming the Valley's a fairly wide pitch. In fact, I think we were talking about
it afterwards. I saw you pre-game trying to measure it yourself. Like
on my phone. Yeah,
when you thought no one was watching and you had like a split second, you were trying to sort of...
That's right.
You count squares with your eyes.
But all I was going to say was just also that, just on the same question, is that Bonner's post-match interview, he said that they'd done loads of work on how Garner likes to have his wingers and his fullbacks, incredibly wide. And you did notice that, these like big long switches, which is where their goal came from. And it happened a couple of times. A few times I thought that it had gone out of play, and I was like, oh, that's gone. And then they, you know, somehow bring it down to their chest. It's clearly something they work on a lot. I don't know, do you think that second half especially is like a marked improvement on similar examples from last year?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I saw it at both ends of the pitch. So firstly, we were stronger in defence on this wide pitch, like you mentioned. But then actually going forward, what I found really fascinating second half was comparing ourselves to the last time we played at the Valley. James Brophy, in my opinion, was man of the match that day. And he basically hugged the left-hand touchline, didn't he? He caused them all sorts of problems by being so wide and his pace. Whereas second half on Saturday, what I found really interesting was that our wide men, both Brophy and Tracy, were tucking in, and we were getting so much joy from them playing more narrow. In fact, you see it with the goal. You know, Brophy is tucked inside. He's basically in the centre of the park, and then he knocks it out to Dunk, who crosses it in. So, yeah, I think we are showing signs that we can deal with those bigger, wider pitches, which we're going to need to do. There's going to be loads of those games coming up. But also sort of going forward, we seem a lot more exciting on those wide pitches as well. We can hit people from out wide. You know, we've seen goals coming in from those wide areas, and Saturday was another example of that. But also sort of through the middle, we're really exciting as well.
Yeah, absolutely, completely agree. It's a good test to come for, I think. And you know, I'll add on to that. a lot of the defending we did at Oxford is a similar is a similar point on that as well. But yeah, something that you know, we'll see. It's a tough first five games, especially the three away. So I think it's yeah, it's good. It's good to see us come through with, well, 1 point, but
you know, right. Well, we've got two games coming up this week, so we should probably have a look at them. The first one, Tuesday night, it could be our first chance to tick off one of those predictions from our season preview.
What, is Lewis Simper going to play 30 times between now and then?
We welcome Southampton in the second round of the Carabao Cup. And because we couldn't get hold of Craig David, Lucy Pinder or Rishi Sunak, we had to speak with Ben from the Total Saints podcast.
Matt Letizia not available either, was he?
Right, and news fans, I'm joined by Ben from the Total Saints podcast, ahead of the game with Southampton on Tuesday night at the Abbey. Second round of the Carabao Cup after beating Millwall a couple of weeks ago. First competitive meeting between the two teams. Obviously, there was, I think about 4 or 5 years ago, we played each other in the Papa John's Trophy, but you were under-23s, it's a competition we'd not particularly care for. So, yeah, obviously, it'll be an interesting encounter. Seems like... I guess a good start to the season for Southampton. Obviously, good result away at Leicester. So from the outside looking in, things are pretty positive. But how have things been going so far?
Yeah, no, thanks for having us on, Tom. And as you say, I was working out for our pod. I think between the two clubs, it's 247 years we've been in existence, and it feels weird that we've never played each other in a senior match. So it's always nice to have those moments come along. But I think, you know, probably lots of football fans around the country relate to the old roller coaster syndrome. And I think this season, you know, with Saints, that's very much been the case already. Got smashed off the park at Spurs, first game of the season. We fought back to draw 2-2 with Leeds last week, and they just turned Chelsea over. So maybe that wasn't a bad point in the end, and then a really good away win at Leicester, who obviously are struggling, but you still got to try and win these games. So a bit of the typical sort of good, bad and ugly so far, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously been an interesting one. I think, you know, having spent the sort of 110 years of our history looking upwards at the Premier League on a top flight, we maybe see it as a bit of a a division where there's six teams that are really good. There's a few who aren't very good, and then in the mid, that sort of bit in the middle where, you know, I guess Southampton would probably fit naturally. What realistically are the expectations for this season for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably, to be fair, I'd probably say six teams and 14 teams. You know, it's anyone can finish seventh and anyone can finish 20th, I think, outside of those. We've obviously spent the summer rebuilding a little bit. They brought in a lot of young players, Gavin Bazuno, the centre-back, Bella Kotchup, players like Mara up front, and then also Romeo Lavia, who's really settled in for Manchester City. So, I think with young players, whilst there's an element of excitement around, there's also that nervousness that young players can be a little bit more inconsistent. So, we're a fairly, I think, reasonable bunch on the South Coast, Tom. You know, we don't get too carried away like some football fans do. I think if you offered me 17th now and a chance to build on that next season, I think we'd take it. But the glass half full would probably be to try and aim towards mid-table. As I say, anyone could beat anyone in the Premier League. And I think probably everyone in most leagues could say that. So I think for Saints, it's about trying to get off to a good start, trying to get to sort of 10, 15 points as quickly as they can. So you're almost halfway there to staying up, really. And then you can kind of enjoy the sort of second two thirds of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. The Carabao Cup then, obviously a competition that I guess for a lot of teams in the sort of upper parts of the Championship and the Premier League, maybe not the first priority, should we say. In fact, a lot of the Championship teams that played lower league opposition in the first round got knocked out, you know, weakened teams, stuff like that. How seriously are you guys taking it, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair to Hasenhüttl, he's always taken the cup seriously since he took over 4 or 5 years ago, Tom. I think, as you say, appreciate it. It's probably our best chance of getting a trophy, and even then it's slim. I think when you look at, obviously, the big boys tend to take it a bit more seriously when they get to the latter stages. I mean, you know, we had a really good result this time last year. We actually played a similar coloured team down at Newport County, beat them 8-0 incredibly, and then beat Sheffield United on penalties. And we only lost to Chelsea, you know, who got all the way to the final. So he's you know, he has rotated over the years, but I think he always, it's not like some sides where they just chuck the towel in and pay a load of kids and things like that. I mean, he, you know, I would think he'll take it relatively seriously. We've got obviously the Leicester game out of the way. We've got Manchester United next weekend. That's the early kickoff on Saturday, so there's quite a bit, you know, less recovery time potentially. So, you know, he certainly won't go at it half-hearted. But I think likewise, Cambridge will fancy their chances that there's going to be, you know, probably five or six Blamey players that don't play regularly and are looking to try and sort of stake their case for Saints.
Yeah, obviously leads us quite nicely on to Tuesday. I mean, as you say, well, Hasn't who taking it seriously sort of while he's been with the club, but maybe a little difficult to predict exactly what sort of lineup it'll be. But generally speaking, which players should we be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, I'd fancy James Ward-Prowse to play, to be honest with you. He's barely missed a minute of football over the last four or five seasons. He just loves playing. He's missed a consistent. I think the only sort of games he missed last year were just after being sent off against Chelsea. So I think he'll play. Other than that, I think there will be some changes. You know, the likes of probably Alex McCarthy might get a go in goal. I think probably Oriol Romeo, Ibrahima Diallo in centre midfield, one of them might play. Neither of them played against Leicester at the weekend. And then I think there's a few players that sort of really fighting to try and make an impression on Hasenhüttl, you know, the likes of Adam Armstrong, the likes of Mohamed Al-Younissi. Theo Walcott hasn't played at all this season. He was back fit and on the bench at Leicester, so he might give him, I don't know, 45 minutes, 90 minutes. Nathan Redmond's disappeared a little bit. Jack Stevens, I mean, you know, whilst we have probably our core 11 players at the moment, we've actually got, I think, 27 players in our squad. So he's got a fair few to choose from. So it's, you know, at the moment, I think any Saints fan would say this. So even more so, probably, Mark Bonner and things like that. It's really hard to predict what Hasenhüttl will do and who will use. And maybe that's a little bit of a positive for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Alex McCarthy, interesting one. He made one appearance for us, I think, about 15 years ago, lost 3-0. But it seems like he's gone on to better things anyway. And if Ward-Prowse is playing, a note to Mark Bonner and guy, just don't give
him don't give any free kicks away.
try and keep it chill around the box. All right, nice. So might be a few interesting names that maybe we're not coming up against too regularly. Have to push you on it though, Ben. How do you see it going on Tuesday? What's your prediction for the match?
Yeah, I think it'll be tough, right? You know, I think, again, we're a reasonable bunch. I think we're a respectful bunch. We certainly don't take cup games, for granted. I think Tom is Saints fan, so I think we're aware that Saints will need to turn up, and whoever plays will need to be up for the battle, right? Cambridge have got nothing to lose. So I think, you know, if we play to our potential, whoever plays, then Saints should have enough to go through. But as Millwall proved in the last round, you know, you have to take your chances. I think they had more shots than you guys, but didn't take their chances. So I'm going to say that Saints will sneak it 2-1 in 90 minutes.
We'll see how it goes. Thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy a trip down to the Abbey, or up to the Abbey, I should say.
Cheers, Tom. Thanks.
Awesome. Brilliant. A big thank you to Ben from the Total Saints podcast for giving us some time and his thoughts on Southampton. He sounds very confident, Tom Walker of UTAS. Too many Toms on this pod today. There's been lots of questions from Toms. And
it's not all me. That'd be weird. Ben mentioned in the chat that we had about the game they played at Newport. I think it was either last season or the one before. They won 8-0. I think in the same stage of the competition. I just kind of have in the back of my mind this like niggling concern that we're going to make like 7 or 8 changes and they're going to go full strength and it's going to be like a bloodbath. But we'll see. It's an interesting game because like there's nothing riding on it at all. And like if we go out, who cares? But a bit like the Millwall game, like I think you're kind of always confident that, you know, we're at least going to compete. But yeah, we'll see.
Julian, what sort of lineup are you expecting Mark Bonner to go with on Tuesday? Do you think he'll take it serious, or do you think he will rest a few players that might be, you know, showing a little bit of legginess and freshen it up? Or do you think he'll go full strength because he wants to put on a show and get a win?
I think we'll see a couple of changes. Maybe not quite as many as that Millwall game. I'd be pretty confident that we'll probably see Janna play. Lancaster may be a good chance for him, especially if Nibs is off. Hanstrup at left back, give him another test. Maybe Lewis in midfield, Simper in midfield. That'd be an amazing test for him coming up against a team like that. But I think he sort of fancies it a little bit. Let's just listen to the way he was talking about it in the post-match presser from yesterday. I think he sort of fancies it a bit. So maybe he's resting. He rested Ironside on Saturday. Who knows? I mean, that's a wild take, but like I doubt it highly. But I think we can see a strong side with a couple of changes. That's what I'm saying.
How much are your hopes fading that you're going to see Balotelli making a debut for Southampton on Tuesday night at the Abbey?
Why always me in front of the NRE? I always have hope that Balotelli will one day play at the Abbey. George, answer to that question.
I guess we should give some context to that, in that that Balotelli to Southampton was a rumour that we saw, what, Friday, Thursday last week.
From a Southampton journalist, to be fair, like a decent, supposedly a decent source.
And we all got excited about it, and then nothing has happened this weekend. No. So we've kind of been catfished by that journalist. But I worry, Tom, when you talk about that bloodbath, that potential, because it reminds me of a time that we got to the second round of this cup and got a Premier League team. It's not happened many times, but I can remember a couple of decades ago now when we got Sunderland at home and they were rock bottom of the Prem at the time, and they went full strength, played a whole load of new signings, and went on and ripped us apart and won 7-0. So really hoping that is not a 2022 reenactment of that one.
It's also worth mentioning that it's the first time that we're going to play Southampton in a competitive game, which is a pretty wild stat, to be fair. It's just Liverpool left, right?
I think it's just Liverpool left for us to play. And actually, off air, we were talking about how uninspiring Southampton at home was. And I know that sounds really ungrateful. You know, we've got a Prem team at home. It'd be a big crowd under the lights. It'll be a really exciting evening. But there's just a part of me that's like, oh, it's not that impressive, is it? But then actually, we've never played them. So I should be more into this. I should be more into this than I am.
The only real angle I have on Southampton, and for any of their fans that may be listening, picking up on the preview that we did, apologies in advance, but the only real take that I have on them is that it's interesting to me that their best and probably most famous ever player is now an absolute raving lunatic who... bang into conspiracy theories, and he's a bit of a flat earther. So that's all I have. Sorry, guys.
I'm sure they're proud of him.
get him where it hurts.
Yeah.
Right in the lattice.
Right. So after we knock out Southampton on Tuesday and get drawn away to Liverpool in the next round, and we tick off all of the clubs then, we will then play Burton at home on Saturday. So here we go. Second fan preview of the pod. This time it's me. I spoke with the rather somber Edward Walker from the D3D4 podcast, who is also a Burton fan, to get his take on their start to the season.
Right then, news fans, it's time to look ahead to our home game against Burton. I'm joined by Edward Walker, who's one of the hosts of the brilliant D3D4 pod, which covers everything related to League One and League Two. Edward is also a big Burton fan. So, Edward, thank you very much for joining us, mate. I know it's only five games in, but it's not looking too great so far for Burton at the moment. At the time of recording, just the 1 point on the board. What's the current feeling amongst Burton fans at the moment about how the season has started?
It could be better.
Yeah.
It's as low as it can get, really, at the moment, to be honest with you. What's slightly bad for me is that I saw this coming. Mm-hmm. It's worrying. This extends not just into these first five games, but it extends back into probably about maybe a third, maybe the second half of last season as well. They were heading in a very bad trajectory. You go back to sort of January time, and they were sort of 10th, 11th, maybe an outside push of the playoffs. It felt like there was a bit of a gap in quality between them and those top sides. So it always felt a bit of a stretch to go there. And the January window saw them lose a pretty big chunk of the goals they had. Kane Hemmings departed to Tranmere. Lucas Aikens went to Mansfield. The big loss was Daniel Jeberson, who'd been exceptional alone in the first half of the season for Sheffield United. Sheffield United needed striker options, so they had to recall him. And so with the final day, he gets recalled. And you've got to basically grab some now. I know we ended up going with Christian Saley from Bournemouth, who was okay, but nowhere near Jebson's level. And the second half of the season really started to tail off after a positive start. And I think we finished with maybe, what was it, three wins in maybe the last 15 games, something like that. I think it was. There was a decent one to know over Rotherham, but it really tailed off. We ended up finishing, what was it, 16th, I think, after some bright encouragement in the half. And we carried into the new season. I remember thinking the last couple of games of last season, I don't know if he's the right man to take us forwards, really. It felt like we were always just kind of going out there, kind of testing the waters with formation, seeing what would happen and just reacting to it. And it was wrong to have this reactive approach to games. And even through pre-season as well, I got the sense of that. And it's always quite difficult going off pre-season results because they're not really a great indicator of how strong you are. You look at the performances more, and the performances weren't great either. It was very below standards. Always felt like the opposition were much more capable of hurting us than they were hurting them. And so coming into the season, I I didn't feel too good about them. I don't know if you heard the pods on our own prediction pods. I put Burton bottom. My own personal prediction, I put Burton bottom. Naturally, quite a lot of people look at that and go, well, that's a bit pessimistic, isn't it? But unfortunately, I'm looking right at the minute because it started, as I feared, really, that we've gone into games, especially the first three games of the season, with a lineup kind of designed to just test the waters and see what happens. And naturally, you come up against sides who have some structure, some organisation to them. They know what they're doing. And they carved them open, and Burton just had to try and react to it, and it's a terrible approach to matches.
It's interesting you mention your D3, D4 prediction pod this season.
I wonder if this was coming.
Yeah, you predicted Burton bottom. Remind me, the season before, who did you predict to finish bottom of League One?
We did Wimbledon, actually, to finish bottom. I know what you're referring to. We didn't put Cambridge that much higher, I'll admit, and they made everyone in the country look very silly last year, and they probably will again for the people who are doubting them again. Sorry, I love Mark Bonner. I'll go on there. I'll say now, I love Mark Bonner. I adore him to bits. He's amazing. Cambridge are fantastic. And it wasn't my decision to put them. If I could try to claim it wasn't my decision, it was, but no.
That's fine, Edward. Push the others under the bus. We'll blame them. Going back to Burton then. So, yeah, like you're saying, disappointing end to last season. But the ending of the season before that was quite promising.
Yeah.
So, and that was obviously Hasselbank coming back to the club. So, where are you at the moment with Hasselbank? Are you pro him being in charge, or do you think a time has come and we'll be looking for a change?
I mean, to be truthful with you, I didn't really want to begin the season. I was getting this sense even at the end of last year that we kind of were looking like a relegation side in a number of games in the back end of last season, but had got a points total that already meant we were out of sight, and it was going to take something pretty miraculous to end up in there. You know, I remember I think it was the 2nd of April last year, going up to Morecambe, who were needing a win, and won for ages, were needing a win to go and get themselves out of relegation trouble, which they ultimately ended up doing. And they completely played us off the park. And it's games like that. And there were a few of them where you looked at them and thought, I mean, I'm getting outplayed by Oxford, getting outplayed by Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, a lot of teams did last year those two, let's be honest. But I'm going to get outplayed by them, thinking we don't just look bad, we look awful in a lot of these games. And it carried in. I remember getting beaten by Doncaster in the penultimate game as well. If we'd got anything but a point, it would have sent them down. They ultimately did go down the final day, of course, but that was disappointing as well. And then rather disappointing into Wickham on the final day as well. And I just remember feeling, I think we need change. I don't think this has worked right. And in the 12 months since that season before, where the target had been survival and he'd absolutely smashed it. Yeah. I think his idea was that it was supposed to be a change of style to get us a bit more forward thinking, a bit more good in possession. And it's just not happened. If anything, I wish we were still that ugly team that relegation battle team that just found this miraculous way to get points no matter what. We play ugly, but it'd be a moment of quality in the 85th, 86th minute that would end up getting them the points. And that was what worked so brilliantly in the second half of that 2020 to 21 season. And the season since has not really gone to plan. So coming in the start of the season, I didn't have a lot of confidence in him, and that's reflected in the opinions I had and the predictions I put through him. And certainly now, I do think it's the right thing to make a change. I know it's an early stage of the season. A lot of people look at that, but this stretches back into last year. I think if we're going to go forwards with the players we have, we need a manager who's better setting them up. We need a better coach, essentially.
What's the running of Burton like, the people in charge? Do you think they'll give Hasselbank more time? Or do you think if you lose on Saturday at Cambridge, that could be the last game? Or that they strike you as a kind of management that was...
Well, to be truth with you, I'm not entirely sure he's going to be in the dugout at the Abbey.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I mean, yesterday, I was at the game yesterday, we played Port Vale. It had an important feel about it, even to the match day five, because of it being a fairly local affair. We're both two Staffordshire clubs. They were both sort of down the bottom. We imagine Port Vale might be in the relegation battle this year as well. And Port Vale, after a fairly competitive first half, went and ran away with it, got an early lead early in the second half and then sealed it in the 90th minute. And it got quite toxic. You know, there were chants from both sides of the ground, both the home and the away end, of "you're getting sacked in the morning." And it hurt Jimmy. You could tell it hurt him because he carries a lot of affection for the club, especially from that third spell. And his third spell was the most phenomenal success I've ever seen a Burton Albion manager have. Such rapid progression. And even coming back into this second, when he took over a side that inherited a team bottom of the league and pulled them out of it. But he's sending us back there with the way it's going. And I remember listening to, I think it was BBC Radio Derby afterwards as well. And he was asked, will you be in work on Monday morning? And he said, maybe, which kind of indicates he's not sure. His thinking seems to be at the minute, I have a lot of care for this club. I don't want to damage them further. I need to decide if I'm the problem here. Now, personally, I think he is the problem. I think he is the issue, because we have decent players. I'm not going to say we have world-beating players, but I think we have better players to be better than a single point from a possible 15 at the moment. So I think he will be in the dugout at the Abbey. I don't think he will change, but it wouldn't surprise me if something came out during the week that there is a change.
Well, just
on, I know the stage.
Yeah, I mean, just on that, as a podcast, UTAS, we release our pods every Monday, and it means that over the last few years, we've had a great knack of being really out of date really quickly. So, we're chatting on Sunday.
That's a D3D4 classic, classic as well, D3D4, because we do it Sunday mornings as well, is that we put it out Sunday, we release it around midday Sunday, and then someone gets sacked on Sunday afternoon.
So at the time of chatting, Edward and I are very accurate, and Jimmy Floyd is still in.
He is still at the moment.
just on the subject of players, then, that you mentioned, you said you've got, you feel you've got the quality in the squad to be, better than 1 point from the first five games. What, he is still in charge on Saturday. What formation do you reckon he'll go with, and what players are key for that formation working, would you say?
Good question. I don't know. That's part of the problem. It's the inconsistency of not just performances, but the inconsistency of lineups. We've had so many different choices of personnel and formations to begin the season with straight away. It's like I say, he picks 11, picks a formation, not all of them in natural positions as well, by the way, I should point out. He puts defenders in midfield quite a lot and puts natural attacking midfielders out wide as well. And it just tests the waters and just sees what happens. So I don't know. I mean, it's been a bit thoughtful too. I think against Ipswich, we went through a 5-3-2, which worked better because it was probably more suited to playing a stronger opposition. But I've no idea what plays against Cambridge, to be honest. I can give you the list of the players and you just pick 11 from those, really. I don't know what comes. And then especially if it's not in the dugout as well, it could be something completely different. This is probably the most uncertainty I've got ahead of a Burton game, really, because I just don't know what's coming in the next few days.
Final question then. I guess it's a bit of a hard one to go with because we're not sure what's going to happen over the next few days for Burton. But what's your take on Saturday? Do you reckon Burton can get a result? And if so, what do you reckon the score will be?
I don't know, Stage. I missed last year's. I wasn't able to go. We had COVID in the household at the time. I was coming down. It was around this time last year, wasn't it, actually?
It was late
August. I'm quite glad I missed it. I'm quite glad I missed it, actually, at the end of the day with what happened because on that occasion, I think Hamer got a pair of own goals, if I remember right. And I think at that point, he was like your second top scorer at the time because after the two own goals he got.
He was. And he also finished the season joint top scoring defender for us.
Great. He got more own goals than he did actual goals that season as well, which is great for him. I don't know. I've got a lot of admiration for Cambridge now. I take them very seriously now. I've learned the mistakes of last year, certainly. Massive fan of Bonner. Really enjoying Harvey Nivs. I think he's been taking a bit of attacking midfield position, hasn't he, quite a bit. I think he's been excellent. Obviously, Ironside's great as well. Like Adam May at the base of midfield too. It's like Houlihan hasn't really left, really, for me. I don't know. It's a difference. I think Cambridge are just going to go on as the Arbthor and they're picking up points. And at home, they've been formidable. So, I don't really expect anything, to be honest, on Saturday because I don't know what's coming. But I've been a take a draw stage at this stage. I don't really. It's so difficult to know really what's coming at the minute with this uncertainty and this kind of jeopardy feeling around the club at the moment.
Brilliant. Well, let's hope that after Saturday things pick up for Burton and it gets a little bit better for you, Edward.
I hope so.
Thanks for your time.
Pleasure. Be a debut for our away black away kit as well. Now first team we're playing in yellow this season, so. Be nice to see that. That's too nice a kit to be bottom of the league with, I should say. I'm disappointed that I'm going to be disappointed that kit is part of a bad season, by the way.
Right then, shades of Doncaster fan preview with Edward there. Seemed a little bit down in his dumps, which I guess is understandable. Five games in, only the 1 point, four defeats. Tom Walker, this is like nailed on, dead cert, home win, 3 points. No point even showing up, right?
Oh, I love when you say that.
I'm going to timestamp this now and then put it out.
What could possibly go wrong, right? playing like the team bang out of form and rock bottom of the table.
Like weirdly, like I dread these games more.
Same. I get way more nervous for these games than I do. Yeah, like Charlton away or anything.
Yeah, I guess the reason for that is that this is where you earn your survival, right? Like these games are the important ones to us. This is a game we have to be winning. I know it's early in the season, but this is not a good team that we're playing. They seem pretty unhappy with Hasselbank, it's fair to say. We'll see if he makes Saturday or not. But if he does, like, there's obviously a bit of a cloud over, you know, over him. And I guess the last thing that you'd want is them to sack him. And then there's that kind of natural lift that, you know, you often see when teams get rid of underperforming managers. I'd like to think it could be maybe a bit more comfortable than the Exeter game was. I don't think they're as good a team as Exeter. So that's the first thing. What could go wrong? Maybe. I guess the only thing really would be Tom Hamer sticking one in the right end this time, or two, like he did last season. But we'll see.
Julian, Tom mentioned earlier in the pod about points return. We go into the Burton game on 7 points. If we were, you know, and try not to get too ahead of ourselves here, but if we were to win that game, we would find ourselves on 10 points, obviously. How much of a surprise is that to you, given when the fixtures came out, MK Dons, Charlton, Portsmouth, it was quite a difficult start. Exeter could have been really tricky as a promoted team. How much of a surprise is it to you then that, you know, by the end of the sixth game, we're going to have at least 7 points, possibly 10. And if we do win, you know, how would you rate those opening six games?
Well, yeah, we sort of touched on it earlier, like you said. I mean, just my rudimentary maths that I literally just did now with my hungover brain, so I would sort of take this with the biggest pinch of salt, is that puts us on 75 points if you do that for our season, which is, you know...
Say it.
Does that put you in the playoffs? Maybe it does.
Does anyone know the best pubs to drink out near Wembley?
Yeah, look, it would be a brilliant start. And I suppose what's interesting is, like, we, you know, I looked at August when the fixtures came out, and I thought, okay, there's two games in there that we should win, to be honest, and that's Exeter at home and Burton at home. So in terms of, you know, do I think we could get a point from one of the other ones? Yeah, definitely. So I probably had us down at 7 points at this stage. So to be honest, in a sort of, you know, trying to not look specifically at the opposition, even though Tom is absolutely right, like, these are not a good side and they're making themselves a candidate for that side, that crew of last year that are just sort of sinking like a stone, just going backwards. Doesn't mean that they don't win a game throughout the whole season and someone's got to lose to them. So, you know, to me, like, if I'm forgetting, you know, looking at the opposition, just taking August, I probably was looking at 7 points for par for us. And we've got that now. So, I don't know, is that a cynical way of looking at the game? I mean, we should beat them. let's just make that very clear now.
I hate to break it to you, but 75 points last season would not have got us playoffs.
That's why Bonner has to go.
Wickham finished.
Is there no end to our misery, George?
well, there is a silver lining. 75 points would have got us ninth, which is Matt Caspel's prediction for the season.
Oh, that's so, not a silver lining. Statistically,
the M train is on for another win with his takes.
Jordan, if you had just said to me there, 75 points would have made you finish 22nd last season, that would have been a much better outcome for me than Matt Catch would be right. I finished at ninth. Let's make that very clear.
We haven't taken into account Joe Inside signing for Barcelona, though, in this equation, though. So,
What a classico that would be, with Stockton up front for Real Madrid.
Ironside
up front for Barca.
Oh, class. But yeah, comfortable 3-0 win, just like last year. Tommy Hamer at the double.
Well, just to compare it to last year, am I right in thinking that Burton at home was the first win of the season? So yeah, I looked at the fixtures when they came out and I was thinking, similar to you, Julian, I was thinking, yeah, like, if we beat Burton at home, that would either put us onto 5 or 7 points. Yeah. So the fact that we are going into the game already on that milestone just goes to show how well we've started. And
it can be good consolation. Yeah, it can be great consolation for when we inevitably lose on Saturday. But look, if we put in anything like the performances, you know, for 90 minutes against Oxford, the second half against Exeter, second half on Saturday, the 60 minutes against Pompey, we'll blow them out of the park, I'm sure of it. God.
Lads, we've been chatting for far too long. We need to wrap this up. Very quickly, a couple of predictions for the week then. Starting with Tuesday night, Tom, do we beat Southampton?
Cool. Well, look, I predicted at the start of the season we'd beat a Premier League team. So, yeah.
Got back yourself, mate.
why not let this be the occasion? Yeah, we'll beat Southampton and we'll beat Burton.
And wow, we'll double win.
Oh, love that.
Tune in next week for a really jolly podcast.
I think you can probably just clip that one as well. And we'll listen.
Yeah, we'll listen. We'll put them all back to back. Yeah, yeah, that'd be good.
Good, good.
Julian, are we going to win both?
I'm going
to disagree.
Yeah, I think we're going to win both, and I'm going even cockier than that. just to really, really make this a thing. I'm going 1-1, and we went on pens on Tuesday, and then I think we beat Burton 5-0. Absolutely, play him off the park.
We're going
between,
this.
Like between us, we've all been going for way too long.
I know. I know.
Not there's any possibility of things going how you expect they're going to. Yeah, look, let's just, I think we should definitely wrap it up because we are very much leaving ourselves open to other fans listening and maybe
no one listens to the very end anyway. It's fine. People would have tuned off, but switched off by now. Tom, it's been a pleasure, mate.
Yeah, as always, same with you.
Julian, it's been a pleasure.
An absolute pleasure to have you back, George. Thanks again for the Jaegers, Tom.
Thank you everyone for listening. We will of course be back next Monday, where we will be very sad because we'll talk about Harvey Nibs leaving us. Until then, cheerio.